everyone. We're back. Welcome to No Direction Beyond, your Starfinder news, reviews, and interviews podcast. I'm your host, Jefferson J. Thacker, also known as Param, and I'm here joined by...
Oh, I usually go second. I'm James. I write Code Switch.
And
I know
also...
you have seniority.
And we're also joined by another special edition.
I'm Vanessa Hoskins.
And you are?
A person who exists in the world.
And okay, on very the worldly. Network, you are?
I am a host?
You are a host?
I am a network personality.
Indeed.
I'm a blogger. I write, sometimes, I write Craft Adventure when I'm not on hiatus.
Mm-hmm. And you also are our GM for Stellar!
Oh yeah, I do that.
Yeah, yeah. Probably the thing that most people know you for now.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah, no, I GM Stellar for these rascals.
Indeed. All right. And V isn't just joining us for goofs and giggles. She is also here because I have a unfortunate but special announcement. In order to work on some other network projects that we're going to be very excited to bring you, I need a little bit of room in my schedule. And V is, of course, more than qualified to fill in for me as the showrunner for No Direction Beyond. She has the tech skills. She's got the expertise. She's got the writing creds and more Starfinder than most people. So she is a perfect addition to cover for me while I go work on these other projects for the network that you all will reap the benefits of in the coming weeks and months. So for a little while at least, V will be sitting in my chair. Literally, you've got to come down here to Kentucky and run the show from the game room.
From your chair. That's a little far.
But it's a nice game room. It's got air conditioning that you're not allowed to use while you're podcasting.
I mean, it's super dark in here because I don't want anyone to see my garbage, but I just moved. And so hopefully by the time that happens, I'll have an equally nerdy and amazing game room. Awesome. I do have a big on-canvas Lord of the Rings map with a red line showing the path of the ring from the Shire all the way to Mount Doom.
That's a good prop.
I like that.
Yeah.
I'm jealous. The only Lord of the Rings stuff I have is Glamdring on the wall here and Sting beside it that you can't see on frame.
Just those things. Just a couple things.
It's not as cool as a canvas map.
Yeah.
It's not a canvas map. It's a map. It's cool. It looks like it. It's fine.
But Lord of the Rings is for dorks anyway. Let's talk about sci-fi.
Yeah. And we've got some other things to talk about that is in the Hobbits and Rings and really, really long travel sequences. We are here to review The Alien Archive 3 for Starfinder. That's because we are the Starfinder podcast. This is the latest release for Starfinder, though Calm is going to be coming out shortly. Like,
oh my God.
Gosh, really shortly. Wait. I know. I can't wait to read it.
But for now, my hunger for Starfinder will have to be sated by Alien Archive 3.
Indeed.
And sated it is.
So, this is the third in the Alien Archive series, which is, of course, Starfinder's bestiary series, and also their species book, their race book. It's, there's lots and lots of things to play as in these books. There's also a surprising amount of player content in these books, usually, at least as they have established in the past. And we really loved the first two on this podcast. We gave them very good reviews. I believe I even used the statement... This is the measure by which all other bestiaries will be measured.
Oh, dang.
Because Starfinder really hits it out of the park with these books. But do they still? Does the Alien Archive 3 hold up to such a touted and high legacy? Well, we're here to talk about that. So, basic statistics for the book. It is 128 pages. It has, and I quote on the back cover, over 100 bizarre life forms. So it follows the standard this is very familiar if you've seen the first two Alien Archives. Each of the entries is usually on a two-page spread. There are usually one or two examples of each critter when they are presented. Almost half of them are playable as PC species. And there is a few common themes across it. It's got fantastic artwork. It's hardcover. Nothing to be surprised. So what are your initial impressions on just the basic look and feel of the book?
I feel that it has a lot of cohesive themes where you're seeing a lot of creature types starting to be integrated in the settings that don't exist in prior Paizo products, which I appreciate it. Specifically entities that like live in the drift or have drift connections.
Right. There's a lot of deep space and drift critters in this book.
A lot.
I also noticed there were a lot of fey in this book. A lot of fey. Also a lot of undead. Any other common creatures you all noticed?
A lot of anthropomorphic animals. One that's good.
This is like that is definitely one of my criticisms. And ironically, this is the episode that Alex had to miss. Alex is ill. He is very sick right now and cannot be joining us. We wish Alex you get better soon. Please get better soon. We will miss you. And boy, did you miss an episode, because there are so many furry critters in this book. Like common animal that we are familiar with, either actually on Earth or dinosaur. Now, player species. Like, a third of this book is that. I mean, we've got the cool otters.
The otters are so good. The Brenneri, so good.
Yeah, the Brenneri are great. They're interstellar diplomats that have their favorite stone. I mean, they definitely are super cute. But they're very much just like the... they're not immune to it. Just because they're adorable, they still have the thing where Starfinder is starting to become just animal in space... And maybe it's humanoid or not. Marlamals aren't very humanoid. They're just very much space walruses. There are space squids now. Two different varieties of space squids, actually.
You're right. Oh, I looked at those and I'm like, I know these remind me of something. And now I realize they just remind me of squidbillies. And on one half, I'm horrified. But on the other half, I just want to be a squidbilly. I mean, that's all I want now.
I mean, there's even camel people in this book. And of course... I mean, I love the book. I love the book. I love moth people. I mean, there's the Decimar, which are nothing but space moths.
More playable insects, because we didn't have enough playable insects before, right? We only had like 8,000, and we needed 8,001. So
But these ones are fabulous. So I'm giving them a pass.
Okay.
those fungus people are absolutely horrifying. If one of those was in my house, I would burn the house down.
Oh, yeah. The fungus people you were talking about. Oh, here's our space squids. I'm going to pull them up in here. The Itjirki. Also, this is embracing the sci-fi theme of names I can't pronounce unless I bother a Paizo developer to tell me how I'm supposed to.
Yeah. The mushroom people are the Hortus.
Yeah, the Hortus.
And they're actually plants. Like, they have plant benefits and things, which is kind of cool, but they're horrifying. They look like monsters.
I don't know. They're drippy. The one on the left looks like he's just having the best time ever. I mean, he looks like he is on shrooms, so it works.
Yeah. I mean, he looks like he's having a great time, but, like, is that trip going to go bad?
Yeah, he's liquidizing children. He's having fun doing that. He looks like a monster.
So these are actually good aligned species as well, so they're definitely not liquefying children.
No, that doesn't matter.
I'm pretty sure liquefying children is an evil trait.
I mean, what if it's to feed more children?
Yeah, come on, arbiter of law and good, Param, tell us.
Well, I'm going to definitely take a firm stand of liquefying children bad.
Okay.
But they have a bunch of different races in this book. There's even another aberration race, so if you love playing really weird stuff, I'm going to butcher the pronouncement of this, Itjirki?
Oh, the Itjirki. I thought you were talking about the other aberration race in here.
Oh, what's the other one?
Oh, gosh. It is the one that the Yeth hounds are trying to eat. They're in the...
Oh, the Yithians.
Yeah, the Yithians.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Which have appeared. Also, there's a lot more...
They are the silliest. They are just so redonkulous.
There's a lot of Lovecraft stuff. Not a lot, but there's more Lovecraftian monsters in this book than we've seen previously, which is not a bad thing.
No,
you got like Color from the Void or whatever the heck that one is.
That was Alien Archive 2, wasn't it?
Yeah, the Color Out of Space or whatever. Mm-hmm.
Color Out of Space. Oh, the Yithians. I think I skipped them because they're literally the last creature in the book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's another plant race that's basically Leshies, the Raxalites. But the best, one of my favorite things about them, this is brief overview, not getting into specifics, it's just they're plants. So when they spore, they turn into seed, or they have seeds, and they're like dandelions. So they just blow babies everywhere just by walking. And I like that. That's very, very weird. And I enjoy that. Also, the villain from the first Incredibles movies in this as well.
Oh, who is that?
The Ren Dalaran. It's a CR25 colossal magical construct that's a ball that has three chain arms.
Oh, yeah. I did not see it. There are a lot of colossals, and there's also a lot of kaiju. In fact, there is the... I'm going to butcher all these names. I'm so sorry for everyone that's just screaming at the podcast right now for how badly. But the... not the telelith. The Tekkenki. Or the Tekkenki? I don't know. But basically, it's just a robot kaiju that eats other kaiju.
It's so cool. It's Metal Gear. Basically Metal Gear. I love it.
Yeah, and if this thing was humanoid, we would finally have our mecha versus kaiju going on. But they're like six-legged like space horses that have anti-technology powers. And when they show up, a civilization basically shuts down. But they usually show up when a kaiju is around wrecking a civilization. So it's sort of six of one, half a dozen of the other going on.
So they're just a very, very destructive solution.
Right.
Yeah. And they look like, if you've ever played Metal Gear Rising or Vengeance, they kind of look like Blade Wolf. And I'm down with that. They're so cool.
They're reminding me of like the Walkers in Horizon Zero Dawn.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one, too. Mm-hmm. Man, they're especially the art for it is just so cool.
And we also get one of the player species that I really enjoy being here. And this is totally going to make V happy, because what's better than playing a giant bug person? Playing thousands of little bug people at once.
That guy.
The
Spathany.
You are a whole bunch of bug people all in one human shape. And you basically get to just, you go by your colony name. But you just don't bother telling people that actually each individual one of these creepy collies has its own name and intelligence score and is totally a sentient free being.
Thousands of bugs, all of them sentient and free, but you just form this hive mind colony and are like, oh no, we are so-and-so.
Yeah. And then go ahead.
Oh, it's kind of like a worm that walked that doesn't suck or for use to the Halo franchise, the Lacologos or the Hunters, where they're just colonies of sentient, like, worms that come together. Think that, but, like, buzzy bugs.
Yeah, it's like wasps and flies and stuff like that. They actually look cool, and I thought they were originally going to be technology-based when I took a look at the art, because there was, like, lots of hex grids and stuff. And nah, it's just yellow jackets. Really, really, really helpful yellow jackets.
They look kind of like butterfly scales.
Oh, yeah.
I could see that. Like little butterfly wings. I was actually hoping that they were a technology swarm when I first saw it, like a bunch of nanites that got sentience or something. I can be down with bugs. I actually almost played one of these as soon as I saw it. I asked my homebrew GM and I was like, can I play one? And she said yes. And then I played a halfling instead.
I mean, I love my hobbitses, but why did a halfling rule out the swarm of talking bug people? You have an entire workers union dedicated to your tongue.
There's a joke in there somewhere, but not for this podcast. The reason I chose halfling was because they get like a +2 racial bonus to a bunch of stuff that stacks with everything else. So it's like perception and acrobatics and athletics and just a million things. And also to their saving throws, like they get all the bonuses. They're an amazing race.
Param, if you could bring up page 124 for me on the Valkyrie, not because I think the Valkyrie themselves are amazing, because they're a pretty standard creature, but the art that they have for the Valkyrie is amazing.
Oh, yeah.
It's so good.
It's not what you think. It's Obaziah.
It's so good. It's like, here's a Guana Valkyrie, and it really drives home the point that like everything is open to everybody in the universe, basically, and that like when we think of Valkyries, we definitely think of humans, and mm-hmm. Pathfinder's original lore kind of also does that as well. Yeah. But just by putting that front and center, you're like, yeah, you can be whatever weird multi-bug creature you want. We have an iguana in the suit, so really everything's on the table.
Mm-hmm. So iguana cool. Valkyries.
They only attack in sunny places.
Yeah. Also, some of the most ridiculously OP power armor is available for the Valkyries. The Angel Frame. I mean, this is a level 16 power armor with an 18 and 22 armor bonuses that can just deal 2d6 punch damage just because. And it's got like a sloth of it's got like a ton of just upgrades. Also, but to bring it in, it's a 1 a minute frame.
I mean, yeah. You actually just wear it as clothes, and then you command it to become armor around your body. You're basically a magical girl. Also, Angel Frame is the most anime name for armor I've heard in a while.
It's pretty anime.
I'm down with it, though.
You get a +6 max dex bonus, so with the huge armor class bonus, if you're dex-based, now you can use this power armor and still be amazing.
And the capacity is 100, so that's 100 mm-hmm. minutes, which in a Pathfinder or Starfinder day is really long.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you just like use an action and don the armor and then, oh, battle's over, put it away, back to your regular schoolgirl clothes or whatever anime thing you were wearing.
Your duster, yeah. Your duster. And I do like New Undead, so there's a couple of those in there. Go ahead, Param.
You could do a whole Super Sentai series with that armor.
Yeah, and it's not Valkyrie restricted either, so anybody that wants to burn a bunch of feats to take it, you're more than welcome to.
Oh my gosh. So you're talking about the undead. There are tons of ways to die horribly in space, and this mm-hmm. book continues to explore that.
Yeah, the Varkulak, which is right after the Valkyrie, somebody who's undead who just doesn't want to die and just refuses to die. And they still get the evil alignment because they're undead, which is kind of messed up.
But it mentions that a lot of them just reintegrate into society, looking as death as a setback.
Yeah, I mean, the noble version of them actually has the chaotic neutral alignment. But yeah, they're just like, nope, not dying, not doing it. And I appreciate that on such a, like a barbarian rage level.
I also like that the one of the examples of the art is just a Yosoki knight. That's just like implying that this thing has been around since Pathfinder days. It's just not wanted to die that badly.
Mm-hmm. Just like, no. I'm undefeated. I don't know what you're talking about.
And speaking of undead, like a very like horrific undead is the Drift Dead Amalgamation, or is that what it is? The Drift Dead Amalgam. Well, the Drift Dead Amalgam, which is just when lots of dead undead things that have died in the drift happen to float together or get exploded together. They form a horrible corpse orgy-ish explosion of nasty.
I have to compare it to the corpse orgy.
Yeah. Oh, God. Corpse orgy. I hate that. Please never say that again.
It's a terrible monster. Terrible words. Go ahead.
I don't like it. Yeah, no, they just get, like, mashed into this one super being, and the picture on the right is, like, three Skittermander stuck together, and it is horrific. I don't like it. It's called a Drift Dead Amalgam. It's not just like, oh, you died in the drift. It's like, no, and we're fused together.
And if you don't know the fluff behind Drift Dead, it's that you die like despondent and alone in space, and just like the emptiness of the void reanimates you and the loneliness that comes with that. So that means you felt isolated with that many other people, and you all came together. It is... love it.
Yeah. So... with all the horrible undead that exist in Starfinder and the other horrors that this game continues to spring on us, any smart planet should just get space travel and say, nah.
Yeah, just fly off into the drift, because at least you can run from most things.
I mean, that's kind of what the Izzelgun did. They're a Starfinder Society race that actually made it in here, which is also one of the other subcategories. Mm-hmm. A lot of stuff that was introduced in Starfinder Society appears in Alien Archive 3, mm-hmm. Including the Izzelgun, which are these like a race with six appendages, two arms, two legs, and two either. So they can kind of knuckle walk, or they can rear up on their hind backsies and have two big hands. And it's kind of cool because there's actually race things for that that changes your speed and your reach and everything like that. So they're large. They're pretty cool. And they're straight out of Starfinder Society. The Mormala we talked about earlier, straight out of Starfinder. And then the Jinsouls.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about the Jinsouls. Yeah. Man, those things are nightmare fuel.
Yeah. They're not playable, but they have like thousands of eyes. There's these, once again, scary bugs with cybernetic enhancements. And
so the Ezelk units in our local lodge have the nickname Gumby Centaurs. And once you see it, you cannot unsee it. Because they didn't take the art from the scenario that they're in, but they have a very flat 2D kind of face there.
Why did you do that? Why did you do this to me?
Because the world is better when you look at things like this, because it's hilarious. Because then they want to protect their whole species. And you're like, oh, God, you're goofy, but I can relate. You know, it's nice. There's also a fair amount of stuff from Adventure Path Back Matter in here as well. The Shimshareen are from the one of the Dead Sons Adventure Paths. I think book three. They're a whole race of crystalline people. There's a couple other ones that are from there as well.
Are the Shakalta from something?
Shakalta.
They're the energy people that like bond together like two spirits.
No, that one's actually unique to this book.
All right. Can I talk about them for a second?
What page?
They are, it's page 92, 93. They are my very favorite race in here conceptually and my least favorite playable race mechanically. Because they...
Oh, so happy.
James knows why. Yeah, they're really happy. They're really cool. So they are born as souls, and then in their entire juvenileness, they just flit around as souls. And then to become adults, they merge with another, and it's completely a consensual merging. They merge with another soul and become... together this energy body that the both souls inhabit, and they have a lot of really cool abilities around having a body made of energy and all the psychic stuff of having two souls and stuff. Every day, like, you have two different personalities and you roll randomly to see which one's dominant that day, and the other one like still is aware of what's going on but can only communicate with the soul that is in charge. It's really cool. However, they have the worst mechanics in the entire game, and they're not playable if you want any sort of power balance at all, because they are dual classed. They have to multi-class in two classes, and they have to be within one step of each other. And so because of that, like, multi-classing in Starfinder is bad, y'all. It's real bad. And so because of that, you're stuck with, I must play a bad build. I played around trying to get a Solarian to work, because they're all like solar energy sort of feeling. And I'm like, Solarian and Soldier, and I couldn't make it work, even with Soldier, which was like, okay, that's super generic. It was still like light years behind what you'd want.
Yeah. I mean, like, I think if you're looking for combo, Soldier Mystic might be good, but you still end up just so far behind because you lose out on Bab that you're a party band-aid.
Yeah, the only one that I was thinking would work is Soldier Solarian, and then mostly you're just pretending to be a soldier.
Yeah, you're just taking a two-handed weapon and just trying to chop away at problems like you're a lumberjack and everybody's a tree.
Well, like, I wanted to make a melee Solarian, but that doesn't work because your weapon doesn't advance enough. I really wish it would have had a really cool way to make multi-classing playable, and then people would be like, wait, now I can multi-class because I can do this thing. Nope.
Yeah, especially when they have to be in step with each other. That's kind of an issue. And I mean, if you're playing a home game, you could probably get that bent a little bit.
This book also has a bunch of starship monsters. Because of, I'm guessing, Star Trek Discovery, you've got the space tardigrade, except they decided to supersize the crap out of it and make it a very, very large spaceship instead of just, you know, a huggable monster bear. and then my personal favorite starship monster, the Gwalid, which is a fey that is an asteroid that dreams to detect civilizations that have enough technology to see planetary extinction asteroids coming, but not enough technology to stop it. And then it feeds off fear as it puts itself on a terminal trajectory towards that planet, letting everybody on it just go absolutely insane. Society starts falling apart. Governments break down. Everybody starts having really awesome parties. And then at the very last minute, it goes, nah, and then just veers off.
it's like Majora's Mask, except that it just never actually hits. And I think one of the best parts about their whole entry is there's an item that's a drug that's just called acceptance, which is just like, which a guy made for his family. It's like, oh, we're, you know, we just got to accept it because we're all going to die. And this society still collapsed because of that. But later on, people found the recipe and they're like, hey, this works pretty good against repeated exposures of fear. Mm-hmm. But man, that's like a, what is that? A shelter, the Porter Robinson thing. It's just like, man, that's bleak. And it's vague.
The worst part of the apocalypse is the day after the apocalypse. And the horrible regret of all the bad decisions you just made.
You're like, why did I do that? Oh my gosh. And like society's just gone and it's all for nothing. And
we have an analog for that. You can just look up people after 2000 when 2001 came around. It's like, I have no savings and a bunker full of canned food I don't want.
Oh man, you better love Tiny Weenies.
Yeah, like
that's another show.
Like the amount of Fae is great. Like they also added what did they name them? Like glitch gremlins, because there was a similar monster that appeared in a scenario, but it was called something else. Yeah, but man, they look creepy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember what page they're on, but they're really creepy. They look kind of like you'd mistake them for grays, except they're like, they kind of look like a Starry Night as well, with like big open eyes. They're proper terrifying, especially in bunches.
And I like that, unlike the normal gremlin, they don't destroy technology directly. They just cause enough annoying glitches to trick you into breaking your own stuff.
They do. The Hopkins are beautiful. They're amazing. They're in Pathfinder. And they were my favorite, like, evil Fae in Pathfinder, and now they're my favorite evil Fae in Starfinder. And it's not because their name is so close to my own last name.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah. Hopkins, I love. And especially because they get you to trick and, like, break your own stuff. They have a cool ability where if you miss them with an attack, they just divert it against another legal target and force you to reroll the attack and damage against that other target.
Yeah.
So it's just like, we have to, you know, whatever we do, we have to save this person. And they're like, okay. And they just like stand there, like full defense. And you're like, shoot them. And as you miss, your bullets just like zing around and hit the other person. How did that happen?
That's what happens when you jump with an AWP in Counter-Strike.
We killed the ambassador we were supposed to save.
And there's another Fae, the Lucadrians, and they kind of, they're like,
oh, the neutral Fae.
Yeah, the Beefcake Stargazer Fae. Mm-hmm. Like, they are fantastic, and I want one. Like, they're just Matthew McConaughey, I think.
Mm-hmm.
If he had a better appreciation for, like, lunar phenomenon. And I'm with it. I'm down with it.
That's good.
Because, like, we have a lot of malicious Fae or Fae that's, like, really driven to do something. And this one's supposed to drive to do the moon stuff. But when you're driven to do moon stuff, you generally, like, go, moon. Also, Lurkers in Light, because they're absolutely horrifying and they're in this book.
Oh,
as well.
My gosh. I hate those things so much.
They're amazing. They're so awesome because they're so evil and terrible. But when you see them, you're like, oh, it's a bright little fairy creature, and it's glowing, and it's so nice, and then it murders you.
The first time I'd ever been mechanically, like, or, like, afraid because I didn't understand how something worked in Pathfinder, it was because I was fighting a Lurker in Light.
Oh, wow.
Because it just, like, blew away my expectations of what an enemy in the game would be. And the fact that you can, like, lift part of that power to your weapons as an augmentation, as a fusion to make it invisible until you, like, attack somebody with it, kind of, I think, will allow you to fill people with the same dread of, like, there wasn't a knife there before, but there is now. Also, if you go to page 62, Starscream makes an appearance.
Starscream?
As a Kami. Yeah.
Oh.
No. Yeah.
Okay, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. It's a page about Kami and, you know, about what they inhabit and everything. And there's evil Kami, which I'm actually pretty a fan of. Because oftentimes they say Kami end up being, if they're evil, they end up going Oni, but there's a little bit more wiggle in that, and I think that's pretty good.
So, besides really cool ways to kill air players, which is always appreciated, or really strange things to be as a player to annoy your GM, which is also appreciated. This book all introduces as its back matter system, which all of the alien archives have introduced a subsystem in the back that players would really like, would be super useful. The first one had the summoning rules. The second one had polymorph rules. And this one has fuzzy friend rules.
Yay, companions!
Yay. So this is where you can get your own six-legged critter to follow you around. And this did not go how I expected them to build these rules. I did expect there would be like a long feat chain to unlock critters. Kind of like in Pathfinder, there's like 4 feats you can take to get an animal companion that's really nice and strong.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of expected them to follow that rule because I thought that would be a fairly appropriate investiture.
Or there are multi-classing rules, so you can multi-class into like a beast handler or something and get the
critter. Like Starfinder's prestige classes or something like that would have made sense. Or archetypes. An archetype would have made perfect sense here.
Archetype, that's what I was thinking, archetype. Mm-hmm.
Instead, it is the feat chain again, as well as maxing out your Visa card. Because they cost money to buy, and to level them up costs money, and for reasons that aren't well explained.
Because you have to put them through training, and that might be buying expensive kibble, or shiatsu massages. There's a cost associated with everything. Horses aren't free.
So when you have to go buy things to make your animal stronger and beefier, usually animal activists frown on those sorts of medical injections.
Or food.
It's an injectable vitamin, Param.
I have a full-blooded Dogosaurus at the house. I haven't spent thousands of dollars of food on him in a go. Which can definitely happen for their midnight snack.
Let's just say for argument's sake, if you spent $1,000 in food on him and he ate it all at once, he would get bigger, right?
He would die.
I mean, that's not funny.
Well, obviously he's not an animal companion then. He doesn't have the stuff.
Technically he's big enough to count as a mount.
Oh no.
No, that just because you can mount it doesn't mean it's a companion. That just makes it a mount.
Well, in Starfinder, it's a companion if you're mounting it. Because this is also the mount rules.
Man, that sets a weird precedent.
Yeah.
Huh. So when I mount my motorbike, is it now my animal companion?
Vehicle.
My vehicle.
Vehicle. You can buy vehicles without having to feed them kibble.
And without having to take feats.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to take the feat driver's license, please. Okay. Oh, I wanted to get this vehicle, but it's a Class C of a driver's license. Never all mind. Right. Okay.
So
yeah, go ahead, Pam.
So for people familiar with Pathfinder 2's animal companion rules, or with Starfinder's summoned critter rules, or have played mechanics, there's not a lot of surprises here. You have to spend your actions to get your companion to do anything useful besides follow you around. They will totally just follow you around if that's all you want, but you have to, by default, you can just go buy one at your local Alien PetSmart, and you then have to spend all your actions. If you want it to do a standard action, you have to spend a standard action. If you want it to do a move, you have to spend a move. If you want it to do a reaction, good luck. But by default, it can't do anything that you don't. Basically, you get the option to just, this turn I'm going to play as Tigger. And Tigger is going to maul the robot.
Yeah.
And that's what you get for just buying it. You're also allowed to find them in the wild or other ways and then make survival checks to just bond with it really well. The survival checks are not terrible, so it's not undoable.
No, the survival checks are actually surprisingly succeedable, especially considering some of the DCs on higher level scenarios in Starfinder Society, where like at 8th level, if you're not hitting a 28, you're not succeeding on a check.
Yeah, it's 10 plus 1.5 times the critter CR, which is not very difficult to hit for any given trained character in Starfinder. So, honestly, the most economic way to do this is to just keep booting your animal companion every couple of levels to the curb and then going to find a new fuzzy to bond with.
Well, when you look over the creatures, they come in a level range, and their level that they're at, you have to have ranks and survival equal to, but there's none that... like specific types that go from one. Oh, no, I'd said that, and then I realized there's very few that go from 1 to 20.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them have an in-between range or a range that they cut off at or start at a little bit later. Some are close, like Woolly Pods, the Appa, like Appa from Last Airbender, long, many leg thing. That's a 3 to 20. The Shatalashu, which is a magical beast, is 1 to 20. But in general, they're in smaller ranges. The Tashtari are 4 to 20, and you should get a Tashtari because they're laser dogs.
I like that there's just like a little crate of Tashtaris just sitting there.
Yeah, looking rabbit. And for some reason, their art looks so much different than the rest of the book. It looks like it was 3D rendered. I don't know why.
I'm sad that the Prug, their tiny oozes, are only level 1 to 5. I want like a little tiny ooze companion for my whole line.
I mean, you can keep it. It just won't advance much farther as far as like extra benefits, because there is a standard table of advancement, kind of like an Eidolon in the original Pathfinder, where it's like, yep, they're this good, they're this good. Somebody had mentioned to me that they get hit points at the same rate as a mechanic's drone, and they actually get them more. They have a couple jumps of like, instead of like with a mechanic's drone, it's 10 hit points every level. With the animal companion, it's like 10, 10, 10, 15, 10, 10, 15, and it starts to stagger up a little bit. And their AC actually scales pretty well. From what I remember from mechanics drones, at least seeing them in practice, they tend not to be very elusive when being attacked. And it looks like animal companions have a little better shot of being missed. So it looks like there is some benefit to the cost. And you basically just pay the difference between levels each time you level up. Which if you're looking at like a Starfinder Society scenario, just on the back of like back of the hand math here, looks like about 1.5 to 1 scenario's worth of credits, which kind of sucks, but it's an extra character.
I looked at it, and it the math usually is about 10 to 20% of your expected character wealth. So basically, if you're if you teethe to your critter, you'll keep it leveled up with you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you just take out a small percentage, just like, you know, paying for college or, you know, buying up for something nice like a pair of headphones, you'll be able to afford it.
Yeah.
Also, the level range for them is it does say for the level range that's just typical and you can't buy or find it at other levels, but it does say you can train them up past that. So If you want your level super awesome ooze, you just have to go get one and then spend a long time feeding it.
That's fine. I will do that. 20 Prug.
Oh, you get little Rimiru.
Oh.
Yeah. By the way, the art for the little spider companion on 144 looks like Lucas the Spider, and I love it so much. So cute. Not in real life.
But. So... besides the cost, to make these any useful, you're going to want to take the feats. There's two feat chains that are available, one for combat companions and one for mounts. And you're going to want to take the appropriate one for your character. And if you want a combat mount, well, there goes all your feats. This is what you're doing now. And I guess that's okay, because there's not a lot of super attractive feats in Starfinder right now. At least, I mean, we don't know what calm will bring us. But for a lot of classes, that you got feats to spare.
I went to a society game with a 7th level character and realized I forgot to pick 5th and 7th level feats.
Oh.
That's how sometimes you just get to a point where you're like, yep, nothing really I need here. The gear makes me good.
Yeah, Starfinder is really good, easy to get your character right where they need to be about 5th level, and then you're just worried about class abilities and credits at that point. You get the creature companion adept, which is the one you can take right away. For all of these, you need your survival rank. So you're going to be putting skill points in survival. to be good with your critter, and you're going to need to take these feats. So adept means that now you can at least start doing like what the you can use a standard action to grant your creature a standard action, or you can use a move action to grant a move action and a swift action to grant a swift action. Basically, if you don't have this, your critter does nothing but move. You can't even make it fight without this feat.
And I mean, to be fair, I can't make any of my pets fight anything, so. Yeah.
So at this point, it's worse than a companion drone. But when, at level four, or rather when you get four ranks in survival, you can then next take the expert feat, which is then when you start behaving like you expect the companions to work, where you're spending a move to give it a standard, and you can use like a move and a swift to give it a full round action. It can do full attacks at the next gap, which is at 10 ranks of survival, you can take master, and then it can start. It's very easy to control at that point. It can start taking full attacks, and then you get virtuoso, and that virtuoso, it basically can act on its own for a while, but that takes 13 ranks in survival to do. So it's four different feats, two relatively early on, and then a long drought, and then two right away. For most people that play Starfinder in society, you will not see those higher level ones because society stops before that. And
not necessarily. We just haven't gotten that many scenarios yet.
Right.
Yeah. I think they're slowly ramping it up as everyone catches up.
Yeah. Sorry, but, continue, Pear.
But level 13, nothing is 13. Like, even Pathfinder Society is hard to go above 12.
No, Pathfinder Society has gotten surprisingly easier to do high-tier scenarios. I have a 17th level in scenario right now, Society. And I'm not the highest in my lodge either. Like, they've started adding options, especially when you do modules and adventure paths.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can get there.
Cool.
And then, of course, there's the mounted combat, which is just a couple of feats. Mounted expert and combat trained mount. Just means you can use this thing in combat, and then you can do attacks with it. It's nice. It's good to have, but it's not anywhere near as feat intensive as the others. But if you want a combat kitty that you happen to ride, you need to take all of them.
But if you're just looking for that, like, I don't know, Vesk Iomedean knight who wants to also ride around on a giant gorilla or something.
Triaxian riding dragons.
Oh, of course.
Also, why is the biggest irony the class that gets the most combat feats, the soldier, have the fewest skill points to take survival to use these feats? Like, what a terrible irony.
Yeah, that's a thing.
maybe in COM we'll see something like maybe a soldier archetype that gets more skill ranks at the expense of some of those feats or something. Just get a little bit better, because there is also the archetype that makes you have like a bound companion that implies these rules, because it implies that you didn't have a companion, but it also allows you to just to like touch somebody and make them your companion, but it implies that it's not the same type of creature as you. So there's probably going to be an expansion on this, I would imagine, just like how there's been expansions on the summon monster rules with new creatures.
Yeah
So
overall, I think it's well done. It's definitely an option, a character option out there that will be flavorful. Having a pet is a common trope in gaming, in fiction and storytelling. This makes it very possible. The rules are very usable. I was just really shocked to see that a credit cost was associated with it. But other than that, I'm kind of happy with the rules. I do wish that the first feat started you off at the move equal standard instead of having to wait till fourth level to get there, because other pet classes and pet options are already there. They start there. If you are a technomancer or a mystic that relies on summoning, you're already using pet rules that are favorable to you. If you're a mechanic, it makes sense that the mechanic should have an advantage because the drone is part of their class. They made a much bigger investiture than just swapping your MasterCard. But other than that, once you hit fourth level, it's all nice as far as I'm concerned. I do like that it's build a critter mode. But I mean, from what we've seen from Starfinder, the summon monsters are build a critter, the game handles monster creation fairly well. I guess this is how it kind of had to be. And the example critters that they did bring to the table were more than I expected them to bring. There's like two page spreads of animals, example creatures that you can have as a companion. And I expected this to be just one page full of very dry paragraph templates. It's a much thicker bonus section than the previous books have had.
It reminds me a lot of the Eidolon stuff, like the Unchained Eidolon stuff from Pathfinder Unchained, where he has a lot of options. Here's your base stats. Just go wild. Have fun. Mm-hmm. As compared to summon creatures, they're also way stronger than summon creatures.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They have... I'm surprised they're as strong as they are.
Yeah. Like, their damage is roughly the same, but roughly, when you get into abilities, that changes it. But they usually have 2 to 3 times the hit points, as well as much better armor and saves.
Looking at these, if I was running a home game, I would probably waive the creature companion adept, that very first entry level feat, to get you into it. Just because you're already putting dollars into it to see if you even like it, probably at that point, and then just have people start with the expert. That's just me. And one thing I was surprised I didn't see in here was a hug bar. Interesting. Interesting.
So that's the whole book. I mean, we have the appendix in the back that just has lots of good reference that we're used to. And then the ad for the beginner box. I think if you've got this book, you don't need the beginner box, or you're probably not interested in it.
You might want to give that rule book to new players.
Okay. And other than that, you know, it's done. So what do you think about this Alien Archive overall?
So I think it's really good. I really enjoy I didn't really get to talk about it a whole time, but the jump into creatures that are native to the Drift, there's a whole type of them called Spectra, kind of like how there's outsiders native to other planes. They have their kind of things in the background where they're kind of like magical, technological creatures, and there's a lot of them, and I think that's a really cool and unique expansion on the system that you're just not going to see in other Paizo products nearly in the same way. So I think it's something that helps add to the uniqueness of the game. I like it.
Yeah, I'm really loving, like you were talking about, all the Drift creatures. There's so many different interesting Drift creatures in here that it really makes a Drift-focused game almost possible, borderline, because there's enough stuff you can pull into it. But like, there's a lot of interesting things there. I really want to read more about the Drift. I want to know about what it's like to just exist there. And what it's like for all the things that are pulled in. But the one thing I want to pull out that we missed, that I can't believe no one brought this up, Alex would kill us, is the thing that you get when you pour water on a Skittermander is on page 104.
Oh, yeah.
The Stridermanders. I was wondering if we could get through a whole review of this book without mentioning them, actually.
No, I'm not letting that happen. That would be a crime. The Stridermanders are horrific. They're super gross, and they're definitely part of the same like ecological evolution as a Skittermander, but they're not cute and cuddly.
No, they are monstrous humanoids that have no language. These are feral. They are just a predator species. They are referenced as apex predators that are extremely intelligent, but not compared to like wolves and cheetahs. Not people or spellcasters, and they are indeed nightmare fuel. They
have, even in adulthood,
they keep the freaking belly tentacle mouth, which is disturbing enough on a Skittermander when you know that thing's just going to be an adorable teddy bear. This thing is going to eat your character with that while holding it still. It does mention how it will kill you. It does. It's going to hold you still with its 4 massive, super strong arms while it rams its belly tentacle into you to drain you completely dry, it turning you into people jerky that it then keeps around as a snack.
Yep.
It's like a spider, but worse.
And if you... or like, I'm just going to avoid Vesk 3, not going to help you. Because the larval stage of these things is super stealthy and likes to hang on to starships and play stowaway, so they have seated themselves across near space.
Yeah.
Yuck.
The one other thing I just want to make sure we mention, because I found it hilarious, is there is an item called a Flux Fig. It's a level 13 item. Mm. And basically all it does is when you eat it, you change species.
You change species, class, all sorts of stuff happens.
Yeah, it's just like crazy. So it's a dirty trick to play on someone if you're the GM and be like, whatever, you're eating one of the native fruits. Oops, that was a Flux Fig. Guess you're something new now. But... that it's also nice if you have like a campaign and one of your players is just not feeling it and you're trying to figure out how to bring their new character in and you're like, this doesn't work. There's no way to do this. You could probably sneak a Flux Fig in and be like, oh yeah, this is one of these weird things. It's totally in the book. It's legit. It's legal anyway. So I guess now you're a Vesk mystic. All right.
That is a good kind of way to help keep people interested. I didn't think of it that way. I thought of it as a dirty, dirty trap.
Oh, so instead it's, now you're a best mystic.
with
and Param, your final thoughts?
With 8 wisdom. My final thoughts are that I think it's a very well put together book. I think it definitely meets with the high expectations that we've come to associate with the series. And the companion rules are something you're going to want to have available to, well, pretty much anybody that's playing Starfinder regularly at this point has been choked for character options. And this adds a lot of character options that I'm expecting a lot of four-legged friends to appear at my Starfinder Society nights at my local game store for sure. Yeah. Going forward. I think if you compare it to the other two Alien Archives, this is the third place winner of those. I don't think it's as good as the other two, but only by marginal degrees. It follows the formula. I think if it had less animals that walk, I think that's where the weird weakness of this book is that it just got to the point of absurdity to flip a page and see, oh, it's a snail person. Next page. Oh, it's a bird person. Next page. Oh, space chihuahuas.
Bird person.
I think
there.
Starfinder's leaning on that a little too hard. I understand why. I understand it's popular. I know it's a sense of trope. I understand it makes sense financially for them to do this. And I know a whole lot of people will want to play their favorite animal in space. But just to see so much of it concentrated in the book, I think pulls it back a stage. But overall, it's still a very good book that if you are a regular Starfinder player or GM, you're going to want this in your library. It's like I said, it is third place, but only because the other two are so good. It's still a very good book on its own.
There's one creature that I really like that is just a creature, and it's those gasoline slugs from Vest 3.
Oh,
that are just animals that just explode.
Mm.
And that's not unusual, even in our world. There's ants that do that. And at first I was like, that's kind of boring. And then I read it more and I was like, oh, I like this. But
Gears 5 has those in them. I just started playing that, and it's just not fun. It's so gross.
That's not the point. It's not meant to you to be fun. It's meant to survive. But like I was thinking this is kind of my second favorite bestiary, but as you're going over that, because I think the art in this one is more consistent than in Bestiary 1.
Yes.
Bestiary 1, I think, is Alien almost Archive. My weakest one. Alien Archive, it would be my weakest one if this one didn't have that proliferation of just camel people. Yeah, cool. Bird people, cool.
Did you get the Defrix, though? We finally know what they look like.
Yeah, they look like giant rabid porcupines.
They do.
I appreciate that design. That's not meant to be humanoid. That's just like a big old skunk bear type thing.
Bear. And you have more Defrix hide options. I don't know. I like this one. It's hard to rank them, I think, because they each offer so many different things depending on what kind of player and GM you are, depending on what you need for your game.
And you're going to need these because the Alien Archives, you got me doing it now. Because the Alien Archives are so small, you're going to need this book because it's only 100 more critters, because the last ones were only 100 more critters too, because they seem to be allergic to 200 pages in Starfinder World. And sci-fi games need a lot of varied content. We still haven't even covered all the bases. They finally got around to trolls. And if for a fantasy game, I mean, Starfinder is still a fantasy game. It's science, yeah, fantasy. That's why we have so many fey in here. And to not have trolls yet was definitely telling when I was surprised if they aren't in the game yet, question mark. And if we were, if Starfinder was getting equal page treatment that Pathfinder had gotten for its books, this would have been all new original mythological inspired space creatures. Whereas we still feel like we're hitting the basics 3 billion archives in. Is they're wonderful books, but there's still a problem with the system itself, is that it needs more. It just needs more pages.
Yeah, I mean, but it gave me Squidbillies, so that's all I need. I just need to argue with people, let me play them.
Oh my gosh.
Also, as Paizo was very proud of announcing, there's not like 100 playable races in, or species in Starfinder, and that's a...
Oh yeah.
That's a... I don't know if it's overwhelming or impressive.
Another classic in here, talking about the otters. They're great. We've already said how great they are at the beginning of the pod. And I will gladly accept having 14 different types of bug people now that if it gives us otter people.
They're perfect.
I don't like the bug people.
Why don't you like the bug people?
Because there's just so many bug people.
before we go, can we raise a quick red flag about how you can summon Han with the summon monster spell as if they were like creatures rather than the sentient creatures that they actually are? That's like summoning a person.
Well, you can summon Formians, and they're intelligent sentient beings as well. They just happen to live on another plane. Wrong. Doesn't make it not wrong.
Yeah, I didn't realize the Formians, but I saw that with the Han, and I'm like, wait, don't they fly like planes? like that's really messed up, guys.
Did you just imagine it? Just the starship is going through space. Co-captain here, our pilot is. Does anybody know how this fly a starship? Players got summoned.
Can you summon ones with specific skills? You're like, oh my gosh, our pilot just got shot. We don't have a pilot. Quick, summon a Formian who knows how to fly this thing. <He's> like,
You don't have a healer in your group, so you just keep summoning the same mystic.
Some Han like mystic, because they don't like technology, right? So yeah, mystic would be perfect. And like, they've got all these like natural herb things and stuff, and they're just like, oh, you guys again, all right,
if this is a moral quandary for you, remember you can also summon baby Skidermanders.
Oh, that's right. Why? Sorry, last little side diversion. In my Rise of the Rune Lord game, we don't have a healer, so I just summon Agathians, and that's how we're healing. It's a very bad game.
Could you just imagine God, pulling a toddler out and tossing it at the aliens every so often?
Eat that! Eat it! I can't deal with it. These game members are bothering us again. Throw a baby Skidermander out. They'll run. It's fine. They're all grotesque. No one wants to deal with them.
I mean, fair. If somebody threw a baby at me, I would be. That would be the end of that encounter.
Wait, baby? Yeah, you run. Baby with four arms? You run. A tentacle belly? Nope. That's it. No. You get that out of here.
All right. So it looks like we're coming up to the end of the episode. If you wish to find more fantastic content like No Direction Beyond and our other podcasts that include No Direction, our Pathfinder podcast, our Adventurous Actual Play, and of course Stellar, our Starfinder Actual Play with Geom. You're supposed to chime in here.
Oh, I thought you were just talking.
I'm pointing at you. Wrong side. Pointing at you.
Well, I wasn't looking at your video. I was looking at the audience.
Oh, yes. With our Geom.
Try it again. Vanessa Hoskins.
Vanessa Hoskins! And me and James and Alex and Amanda Hammond playing.
Yes.
It's a wonderful time. You want to be there. You want to see it. As well as our many fantastic blogs. You can do so at NoDirectionPodcast.com. And if you wish to join the chillest community in Starfinder, Pathfinder fandom, you can do so at our Discord server, which is available there. You can also find us, of course, at Twitter.com/NoDirection, Facebook.com/NoDirection, YouTube.com/NoDirectionShow. And if you want to see more content like No Direction Beyond, continue. If you want to see more shows get developed, more fun times to happen, or just the ability for us to keep the servers online, you might want to consider contributing to our Patreon. It is thanks to our patrons that we keep the lights on, that Vanessa has a brand new microphone that doesn't make her sound like a robot.
I know, it's great. Here it is. It's got a fuzzy hat.
You put a dead cat on it?
No, it's just a little hat. It looks like a little Russian.
All right. We if you want to support us, you can do so at our Patreon, which you can find the link to at nodirectionpodcast.com. Check the right-hand side of the site on the sidebar on every page. You will see the Patreon link. We would appreciate any help you can give. And, of course, give us good reviews, comments. We want to hear from you.
Uh-huh.
Till next time, I'm Jefferson J. Thacker, also known as Perrin.
Am I the second one again?
Yeah.
I'm Vanessa Hoskins, and I GM Stellar and do a bunch of crap.
And I'm James, and I usually don't do a spoken name outro. I'm already saluting.
All right.
And go beyond with no direction.